And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Happy Friday to all. We're going to talk to Mitch Harper coming up here momentarily. But until then, hello, Ben.
How are you?
Oh, man, I'm fine and a little bit having a little anxiety of how many subscriptions I'm going to possibly have to watch NBA basketball.
Yeah, we'll see. Today's a big day for the negotiation rights of the future of the NBA broadcasting.
And we were just chatting about that coming onto the air because I find that stuff really interesting. I know you and I are both in the media business, so maybe we find it more interesting than most. But honestly, I think the NBA fan, and we'll get a taste of this in the NHL, I'm sure, and probably Major League Baseball too. But you're just getting pulled in so many different directions for your dollar to consume the product. Does that make any sense? Mm-hmm. I think about the Vegas casinos. The philosophy was, let's make all of our parking free and let's give everybody who comes in a free cocktail.
Yeah. Potentially a room.
Because we want them to sit there and play. You know, we want to make the bottom line business as accessible as humanly possible. And I think slowly that's changed in Vegas because, I mean, I don't think you can park for free pretty much anywhere on the Strip anymore. Even Fremont Street, you can't park for free. Like, I think free drinks are coming to it. The point being, like, all of a sudden they're distracting that dollar. You know what I mean? Like, if you're a Jazz fan or an NBA fan, you know, you've got X amount of dollars to spend and you want to access the sport that you love, at some point you're going to get to the rubbing point with fans. You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely. You can't make people jump through hoops to get the product.
We're talking about now, if I want to watch, you know, national NBA games, I'm going to have to subscribe to Amazon, subscribe to Peacock.
Probably, if NBC ends up winning this negotiation today to get the final distribution package of the NBA in 2025-26.
The only over-the-air NBA you're going to get is now on ABC. You can get cable and satellite distribution now only if, and by the way, we're talking about if NBC Universal gets the bid and TNT's out. The only cable/satellite broadcast is going to be the ESPN one. Mm-hmm. Goodbye, TNT. And pretty much everything else is going to be on Peacock and maybe some national stuff on NBC, but not like...
Yep.
That stinks for the fan. That's two new subscription services on top of you still have to have your cable subscription.
Yeah. No, it's not ideal. It's far from ideal. And the NBA does need to be careful about making it too hard. Now, the owners are going to be thrilled. I mean, they're going from, it's like $2.5 billion to $7.5 billion on average was the hope. On average? You know what I mean? That distribution is insane.
But good for them. I don't care about them.
Yeah, right.
At what point are you taking advantage of your at what point do you make it so hard to access your product that you're really doing
everyone a disservice?
Everyone a disservice.
Absolutely. No, I'm totally with you. It's already difficult to do.
So,
and it's only going to get harder.
I don't know. It seemed like there was a real movement, and Ryan Smith believes in making the games accessible, by the way, but it feels like there was a real movement there for a while to be like,
and you
do you remember when local blackouts were a thing?
Yeah. You know, you didn't even mention NBA League Pass, like, which doesn't work for any games on TNT. You can get the like over the backboard feed.
Right.
You can't watch the ESPN game. You can watch the NBA TV game, but like, so you can't even get the good games. You get all the rest of the games. But if you're a diehard NBA fan, you've got to subscribe to that too.
There was a minute there where it was like, you know what? We just got to get this in front of as many eyeballs as we get. We got to get our product everywhere. and let everybody fall in love with it. And it feels like now we're in the reeling back in process where it's like, no, we're going to start cutting it off and you're going to have to start spending some real dough. Joining us now, Mitch Harper. He covers the Cougs for KSLSports.com. Mitch, there actually is kind of a BYU angle to this as we're talking about, you know, sports media and media rights and those sorts of things that, you know, I couldn't help but notice. I don't love the Big 12's distribution, especially when it comes to college basketball. And it seems like the games that shouldn't be streaming are being streamed. And like I'm flipping over to ESPN and seeing a West Coast Conference game and BYU's playing on ESPN Plus or something. Like what's your first taste of their distribution and how accessible, you know, these teams are going to be in the Big 12?
A lot of big ESPN Plus, that's for sure. And you know, coming up in 2025, 2026, there will be more of a Fox element, so FS1, FS2, maybe some network Fox for Big 12 basketball. You know, the football distribution, I think, was solid, you know, especially late in the season, instead of being, you know, relegated to, you know, ESPN Plus or kind of an afterthought in the college football calendar. BYU was on ABC on the final weekend against Oklahoma State. But, you know, basketball, definitely there were some there was a push for streaming, and that was, you know, the Big 12 now on ESPN Plus was, you know, devised by, you know, Bob Bowlesby. And in some regards, you know, that was a reactionary commissioner and kind of league at the time, but maybe a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of streaming. But yeah, you gotta pay to see Big 12 basketball. And that's going to be the case again this upcoming year. I'm curious to see, you know, how much more accessible it does become in the next media rights package, because ESPN and, you know, Fox are going to have 2 billion reasons to, you know, still want the Big 12 to be in the national conversation in a world where the SEC and Big 10 are going to gobble up the headlines. There's still a lot of money on the line with the Big 12, but yeah, it's becoming tougher for fans. They're, you know, being asked to spend a lot of money on tickets. They're being asked to spend money for, you know, to watch the games. And, you know, in some regards, that's where fans got to choose, you know, what do they want to invest in? Is it, you know, college sports, which still, yeah, it might be kind of a professional light, but it's still not the highest level of sport. Do they, you know, shift their dollars to NBA and the media rights there with Peacock and whatnot? And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of ripple effect it does have on the consumer when it comes to Big 12 and BYU and Utah.
Mitch, where are you on BYU basketball and what's happened in the last week? Obviously, the huge addition with Chris Burgess moving over. Rumors about Kay Bakeda potentially following him. I know he's out looking around, but what's the state of BYU basketball after what felt like a low point when Mark Pope left?
It's in a solid place. You know, that anyone saying that, you know, suddenly they're a, you know, Big 12 title contender, I hesitate on that, but I do think that, you know, they're in a position to be an NCAA tournament team potentially next season. The schedule's going to be tougher, and I think that's something that not enough has been pointed out, is, you know, the non-conference is going to be tougher. You might face Purdue, you might face John Calipari, Arkansas team, and MTE. You're going to have at Wyoming, you're going to go at Providence. It could be a preseason top 25 team. I mean, those games alone are tougher than really anything you face last year in the non-conference, and then you go up to a 20-game Big 12 schedule. But I like, you know, the pieces in the roster, and I just think the commitment you're seeing from BYU basketball, this is no longer a world where we're talking about, well, BYU spend. No, they're spending, and they're invested at a high level to go chase, you know, and being in the conversation of among the Big 12 elite. And Kevin Young's getting to operate the program that he sees fit. And, you know, as he told me like a month ago when he got introduced, you know, he's not getting many no's. And when he wants something, he's getting it. And they got a chief of staff who basically is going to be kind of like an NBA GM, where he's going to manage NIL. And so then that allows, you know, Kevin Young to, you know, be a coach and, you know, X's and O's and develop relationships with the players instead of dealing with the headaches of NIL. So I think BYU's in a really good place. You know, the jury's out on where the on-court product will be. Will it be better than last year? We'll see. But they're in a good place long-term to trench as a threat in the Big 12, and that's all you can ask for after losing Mark Pope.
Are we seeing the same sort of spending flex on the football side, Mitch?
It's a good question. I mean, I think that, you know, there was definitely a push early on when, you know, Kalani and the program moved to the Big 12, where they added additional resources with the staff, but it almost felt like it was getting more up to par or a little bit closer to par rather than kind of being ahead of the curve, where it feels like, you know, BYU basketball is making a push to be one or two steps ahead of everyone, at least trying to be. And, you know, I think football, you know, it's interesting because you just don't seem to have that, you know, with football, they haven't had the on-field product that has maybe inspired belief that they could be, you know, in the national race. You know, last year at stretches, you know, there were advanced metrics saying BYU's a national title contender. Obviously, it didn't happen. They lost to the Cane, for goodness sake. But football, but there are a lot more support staff. There's a bigger recruiting budget with, but there's always a desire to have more. And but I just think that now going forward, if we see a world where revenue sharing does come into play very soon, you know, is there as much of a need for all this additional staff and all these additional, you know, facilities or whatever? It needs to be probably just getting the money necessary for revenue sharing and continuing to operate at the highest stage possible that college football has to offer and be in that club, whatever that ends up being. So, you know, I think BYU's got more resources than they've put off for many years. And I think if need be, they can put together enough to continue to put BYU sports and football, most notably, at the highest stage.
Mitch, you're working on your top 100 BYU football players of all time. I know you released the top 25, or I should say the latest 25, 100 to 76. What's this project been like, and what's some of your criteria on how you rank these guys?
No, I think, you know, BYU is going to be going into this fall their 100th football season. The 100th anniversary was a couple years ago in 2022, but due to World War II, they had a couple years off. So this is the 100th season this fall. And, you know, I think some of the big, you know, big criteria, you know, national award winners, All-American, All-Conference guys, you know, not as based on necessarily stats. You know, if there was a, you know, kind of a close call on some players, maybe stats could give a break. But some of the best overall athletes, you know, just talents. And, you know, that was kind of some of the key criteria. And guys just made an impact on the national landscape of college football beyond just simply BYU. And, you know, BYU's got a rich history. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, going forward into the kind of the heart of their life in the Big 12, how much they build on that history and what kind of the next chapter, you know, tells. Because, I mean, you go back to the archives of, you know, BYU football on the 80s, the 90s, even to some degree the early 2000s, you know, they were a kind of a mover and a shaker on the national scale, where they were kind of feared in many regards. Still had that, you know, battle for respect in many aspects, but, you know, BYU had, you know, so much cachet. They go on the recruiting trail and they get a five-star quarterback prospect out of, you know, California, like, all the time. And, you know, just trying to compute that today, that just you can't even imagine that thought. And so it's just kind of a way to highlight the, you know, the history of the program, because I think there's so many kind of fascinating stories of BYU's history and individual personalities and talents, and putting together and kind of talking to some of these all-time greats. You know, I've talked with, you know, Ty Detmer, talked with Luke Staley, you know, Chris Hoke, many guys over the years that, you know, have made a dent that are going to be on this list. And, you know, they still have a lot of deep respect for, you know, kind of BYU football. So it's been a fun project, and, you know, it keeps me busy in a month where maybe it should be slower. I hesitate saying that because I thought maybe April would be somewhat slow, and then Mark Pope goes to Kentucky. So there's always news going on in the BYU world, but it's a fun project, and I've been enjoying putting it together.
I want to ask you about one specific player on the list so far. Number 97. Now, one spot in front of the Payne train. Man, I love me some Matt Payne. Easily my favorite kicker that I've covered. One spot behind Reno Mahe at number 96. Have you gotten any feedback from Hans about his selection at number 97?
I haven't yet. I gotta touch base with Hans and sit down with him for maybe even an interview for the features. But Hans deserved to be in the top 100. And you know, he's in so many regards, like that defensive line that he was part of with Chris Hoke, Byron Frisch, you know, even Satema Nolley. There was a lot of NFL players, and it kind of reflects, you know, what maybe Kalani wants in a defensive line, because that's what he knew was, you know, big physical linemen that had, you know, Tom Osborne's Nebraska recruiting those guys. I mean, Hans was a big time recruit for BYU. He had the whole West Coast and Nebraska when they were Nebraska recruiting him, and you know, he was a really good player for BYU in the interior of that line. But I'd be curious to see what he'd have to say about being 97. And that's kind of the fun thing too, is, you know, getting a few players, former players, chiming in about their placement on that 25, and they're like, you know, get a little bit upset, or I'm on the list. So that's been kind of fun to see, to get some text and reaction from that.
Now, I would advise you against sitting down with him personally, but not because of the ranking. Like, I think Hans would be honored to be 97 sandwiched between the Pain Train and Reno Mahe. It's the sentence. He was an all. No. Let me see. No, that's not the one. It's a sentence. One of Olsen's career highlights was a scoop and score against San Diego State in 1999, which is fine. But you added, with his arms flailing everywhere to celebrate, and included a video. I just didn't. I thought that part of his feedback might not be really positive.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, maybe I took it a little bit farther with. Because Hans is such a fun personality, and it's fun too to kind of look back. I was digging into the archives too, of, you know, with KSL and our immense archives and all the content we have. It's like his personality. It's not just like what people hear on the air is like that. That's just Hans. Like, even back then, he was this like just such different guy. Even Rob Morris and Kevin Federick back then would say Hans is just his own world, man. And it's just pretty cool to. He was a heck of a player though. And BYU defensive lines, could really take a page from what they were in the late 90s, early 2000s, because, if they could be anywhere close to that, they'd be a pretty good defensive line in the Big 12.
Hey Mitch, am I letting the cat out of the bag? You've got a big interview today.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be talking with Kalani Sitake today and kind of doing a debrief on, Big 12 meetings and, kind of go over to the state of the football program and where things are heading, for BYU football. They're going to be starting up fall camp at the end of July. And it's kind of crazy to think it's only 2 months away from getting it going here. So, kind of putting with the portal in the rearview mirror, with the Big 12 coaches meetings in the rearview, kind of a check-in with Kalani to see where things are at for his program as he gets ready for what's going to be an important 2024 and what they – what they look like this season, because I think it's so critical for BYU to establish the identity of what they're going to be, both defensively, offensively. I mean, everything. There wasn't many signs of, the BYU football team that you saw maybe in 2021 with the violent running game and the physical line play. Where's that going to be? Is it going to transpire this year in a 16-team Big 12 where, yes, there's not a clear-cut gold standard team, but it's going to be tough. And I think BYU's got one of the toughest conference schedules in the league this year. So they got a tall deck stacked in front of them, but always curious to get Kalani's thoughts, and should be good insight from Kalani. Chat with him today.
Well, just make sure you start out the interview with some really harsh, hard-hitting criticism. I hear he likes that. I mean, really get after him.
I will do.
Right at the beginning. Thank you, Mitch. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mitch.
You bet. You bet, guys. Take care.
All right, there you go. That's Mitch Harper. Covers BYU for KSLSports.com.
Excited to read that feature.
I know you like that strategy in interviews, Ben. You just sit down with whoever your subject is and just tell them, like, first of all, that's a crappy shirt. Second of all, your team stinks.
You got to catch them off guard.
Now,
George Niang, you're out of shape. Let's talk.
Let's start the interview. They hit you with a really harsh criticism. That'll get you talking.
Yeah. Catch them off guard. That's why the Hot Ones show works so well. Have them eat really spicy wings. They'll open up. Hit them with an insult. Get them spicy. They'll start talking.
And I'd just like to say there is a difference between a, you know, good, tough question and an insult.
Absolutely. I know the difference.
But usually
George Niang doesn't.
You know who loved a good insult right out of the gate was Quinn Snyder.
If you brought anything up, he took it as an insult. So, yeah. Quinn, who's your starters? What is wrong with you? Why would you ever ask that question?
Did you just insult me right now?
I'm not going to talk to you about my rotation. I mean, we're going to see it. We know what plays you're going to run. Just, is this guy going to play the first 5 minutes of the game or the second 5 minutes of the game? I don't know why you would ask that. You're right. I don't know either. Never mind. Sorry, coach.
No, I just...
Talk to you after
no,
the game.
I more mean the, like, he never reacted well to the... let's say you want to ask a question about why they lost, okay, or what is what the hey, what didn't the team do right tonight? The question gets framed as, "Man, your team was just a hot heap of garbage there in the second quarter."
Well, the problem was he took anything, whatever you said. Like it could be, "Hey, your team didn't play very well. What happened?" He treated it the same way as asking what the starting lineup was. Like he thought they were all.
He was a weird
undermining
guy.
Him.
DJ brought up this morning, I'd almost forgot about it, when he was doing one of his very few radio interviews. He was on DJ and PK, and like 5 minutes into the interview, he just stops, and he goes, "You guys going to let me go do my job now?"
There were, he's...
I asked him a question in a radio interview about Dante Exum once, like a pretty benign, and he... bristled and gave me this, like, the answer was basically like, "How dare you put expectations on Dante Exum?" And it was like, "Whoa, dude, I'm just asking about one of your young players, man. It's cool." And whatever, it was his style.
I've really enjoyed knowing that person in my life for the bizarre nature of it and because he was really insightful at times. I learned a lot from him, but also it was weird. And I recognized, like, there's weird things out there and people do weird things. And he was one of them. It continues to just dumbfound me that he took that Atlanta Hawks job.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Because, I mean, like, the Lakers' job is going to open up this summer. The Suns' job probably opens up this summer. The Milwaukee Bucks' job opened up 2 weeks after he took the Hawks' job.
I know why, but I don't think we can dive into that in the next 2 minutes. But, I mean, we could examine as to... Because he is a complicated person, as we're pointing out here.
But there were a lot of good jobs opening up, and he didn't take any of them. He took the worst job that was available. Very weird. The 76ers job opened up. He didn't take it. He didn't wait for it. It's crazy.
Man, have the Hawks ever been good?
No.
I mean, the Neek run, but I don't. How many they made it to?
The Paul Millsap, Kyle Korver team was fun.
That was one season.
That was one season, yeah. It was fun for 1 year.
Great.
Yeah.
Did I tell you? No, I mean, I actually sat down and hung out with the Atlanta Hawks team president once in the airport. Talked to him about re-signing Paul Millsap, and he thought he got fleeced.
Yeah.
He's like, "Yeah, guy better be good." All right, stay tuned. More next. Top three stories, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Time for the top three stories of the day, KSLSports.com. Brought to you by J. Brooks Jewelers. Two locations to serve you, one on Winchester Street across from Fashion Place Mall, the other Traverse Mountain in Lehigh. All right, Sarah, where are we starting today?
Let's go, Knicks! That was me. Let's go, Knicks!
Ugh.
You ready to change your tune on Jalen Brunson?
No.
He just had one of the most historic series we've ever seen.
Yeah, whatever.
Probably the greatest series in Knicks history since like Willis Reed or Walt Frazier?
With the greatest ever stuff. What? Jalen Brunson ain't there yet.
After Jalen Brunson's 41 points in Game 6, he becomes the seventh player in NBA history with three consecutive 40-point playoff games, joining Jerry West, Kareem, Bernard King, Michael Jordan, Allen Iverson, Jamal Murray.
All right. Okay.
Jalen Brunson's the third player in NBA history with four consecutive playoff games of 35 points and five assists, joining LeBron James and Michael Jordan. Like, what are we waiting for? Jalen Brunson's doing all the stuff. I mean, he's beating MVPs. He's beating them on their home floor. He's playing out of his mind. Unbelievable. 27-year-olds with 35-point-per-game playoff average in the playoffs. Michael Jordan, Elgin Baylor. Everything he's doing right now is historic. He's playing out of his mind, and he was great last night. He is playing awesome. So I'm going to take my victory lap on my...
You enjoy it.
Jalen Brunson is as good as any Knick player I've ever seen in my lifetime because I did not get to watch Walt Frazier play.
When they run up against a good team, we'll see how it goes.
You don't think the 76ers are good?
No, I do not.
That's fair. They're going to crush Indiana in the next round.
Yeah, and then they got a break because they're going to get the Pacers instead of, you know, a decent team. And I'm not even convinced Milwaukee was a decent team before all their injuries. And I love it that Doc went right to, you know, it's the only team in NBA history to be, you know, speaking of NBA history and grandiose statements, of course, Doc goes to, well, we won the last game and we were the only team in NBA history to win a game without their top two scorers. And oh my, you guys are lucky we even showed up. And Milwaukee was in deep trouble even before that, but whatever. So they're going to get the Pacers, who can't guard a chair, in the next series. So Ben, set your watch to this. Jalen Brunson will play again 44 minutes a night. And have the ball the whole game. I mean, yeah, probably put up some decent stats against a team that has no interest in stopping.
Jalen Brunson scored 39 points in four consecutive playoff games. The last player to do that was Michael Jordan in 1993.
All right.
He's playing unbelievable. He's been the best player in the postseason so far.
I wonder what his line would be if he played 38 minutes.
Sure. They don't have that ability. And some of this coaching is malpractice from Tom Thibodeau. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It's not easy to play 48 minutes. I mean, here, look, we can pull up Joel Embiid's full fourth quarter stats.
No, but you know when you're not getting stats, Ben?
When you're on the bench.
Yeah.
I get it. But you know when he is delivering? The fourth quarter. Even when he's tired. And here's the problem. Joel Embiid was tired. His fourth quarter, this is cumulative stats for the entire series. Joel Embiid, the reigning MVP, 6 made field goals on 26 attempts. He had 6 made shots in 6 games. He averaged 1 fourth quarter make a game. He had 1 3-point make in the entire series in the fourth quarter. He's 7 feet tall. He had 5 rebounds in 6 fourth quarters. You averaged less than a rebound a quarter in the fourth quarter. You had 9 assists. He had 5 turnovers. He had as many rebounds as turnovers. This is the MVP. And yeah, he's playing a lot of minutes because it's really hard to play in the fourth quarter. And it's really hard to be small and play in the fourth quarter. And Jalen Brunson stepped up. He was playing better in the fourth quarter than he was early in the game. What Jalen Brunson did was awesome.
Fine, but like, Ben, you can even...
Are you arguing that Jalen Brunson's not playing out of his mind right now? Like, he's playing at MVP level.
I'll tell you,
this is a superstar performance right now from Jalen Brunson.
He's putting up great stats, sure. I mean, if you want me to acknowledge that he's putting up great stats, that's fine. But listen, Embiid in the fourth quarter, this is a player who's not in terrific shape ever, and he's coming off how many months of sitting on the couch and then getting dumped into the playoffs and then has to perform in the fourth quarter? Yeah, he came up short, but it's not like it's a surprise. He's also battling Bell's palsy randomly.
Yeah,
like,
no, it stinks.
I mean, yeah, what you're saying is correct, but I mean, you can look into all this and give circumstance. I'm not going to bend over backwards to call Jalen Brunson some legendary player because of one series against a team that is flawed
to
begin with.
Well, it'd be one thing if it was one series, but we saw him do it against the Jazz. We saw him do it last year against Donovan Mitchell again in the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's going to do it in the next round against the Indiana Pacers. Like, if a guy is winning in the playoffs and putting up historic stats, it's okay to just acknowledge that he's playing out of his mind.
None of those teams are guarding him.
Of course they're guarding him. What do you mean they're not guarding him?
They'll pretend to guard him. Sure. I watched Donovan Mitchell play defense for years.
Yes, you're right. Donovan Mitchell's a terrible defensive player. Has no idea what to do with Jalen Brunson. You're 100%
and
right.
Philadelphia has two players.
Kelly Oubre was all over him. Kelly Oubre is one of the better defenders of Jalen Brunson in the NBA. Had no answer for him. Kelly Oubre is a very good defensive player, especially in that situation.
The 76ers,
especially against Jalen Brunson, and has no idea what to do with
them. Have two players on their team, and that's it. And that's literal. As of today, there are only two players on the 76ers.
You can fight Jalen Brunson, be mad at the Knicks for whatever reason.
Whatever.
He's playing awesome. It's fun to watch. The Knicks are a really fun team to watch.
I would not put it past the Pacers to beat them. I don't know if I'd pick that, but they'll get pantsed in the conference finals against Boston.
We'll see.
With Kristaps or without.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll hear about it on national television forever. I'll tell you that.
What's fun about this Knicks team right now is they are not loaded with superstars. This is not a high-priced roster of players that have gone out and have several all-stars that you just dumped into New York because it's New York. This is a really well-built team with really smart trades who really identify with what their head coach is asking and have mirrored that culture. It's awesome. The way they built this team is how everyone should want their team built. It's smart signings, crafty trades, and they have a ton of flexibility still going forward. And by the way, they're playing without arguably their best player, a former All-NBA guy in Julius Randle. So what they're doing is really cool. And Jalen Brunson's leading it. He's been fun to watch.
Next.
Number two, the NHL and NBA drafts are around the corner.
Got the lottery coming up for the NHL next week, early in the week. I think it's, what is it, the 7th? I think it's Tuesday. And then the NBA lottery is on Mother's Day, a week from Sunday. I don't know why they're doing the lottery on a Sunday.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, right? It's always during the week.
Yeah, usually they do it during the week during one of the playoff games.
Utah has, been a 7.5% chance of getting the top pick, which would be pretty sweet.
So the NHL lottery...
7.5, not great.
You're really vying for the top two spots. I guess there's a slim chance they could get third, right? But you're really vying for the top two spots in the NHL versus the NBA, which is the top four spots are up for grab.
So otherwise, they would get the what pick? Ben, fifth?
Yeah, is that where they are? But maybe it's seventh. I'd have to pull it up.
I think it's fifth. Chicago has the most, followed by the Mighty Ducks, then Columbus, Montreal, and Utah.
So... yeah, we will see. They have had equally bad luck in the lottery as the Utah Jazz. And you heard Bill Armstrong joke about that a couple of times. They have not. Six. They have the sixth best odds. They have not ever moved up to the top two spots. So maybe moving to Salt Lake City is their good luck charm.
Well, we've got to figure out who to bribe in the NHL.
Come on, Gary. It's Gary Bettman, the commish.
I mean, the NBA... slide an envelope into old Adam Silver's.
Traditionally, it's been trade a superstar, and you seem to win a lottery the next year.
I know, or buy a franchise.
LeBron, yeah.
That was the kind of how it went.
You trade LeBron, they got two number one overall picks, Kyrie Irving and Andrew Wiggins, who they traded. You trade Anthony Davis, Pelicans cut Zion Williamson.
Well, how did the Pelicans, then Hornets, get Anthony Davis to begin with?
They bought the team.
They bought the team when the NBA was desperate. Remember, the NBA was running it because George Shinn was such a bozo.
And then ended up with a superstar.
And then all of a sudden, oh, we bought the team and number one pick. Ooda lolly.
Well, they've moved. Hopefully that's the case then for the NHL team.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Number one pick. Here we come.
Hey, hope they both win. Hopefully it's a great week for lottery luck in Utah next week.
But as you point out, if history is any lesson, I wouldn't count on it. Do we know who the Jazz are sending to the...
I have no idea. I don't know how healthy Justin Zanuck is at the moment. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, I know he's been back and doing some work.
I guess it won't be Justin.
I would guess Jay-Z wouldn't go. But maybe it's an opportunity to talk about the kidney registry, which he's been big on. And totally understandably. I bet Danny Ainge doesn't go.
If they move back, I'm just dialing in on the face of whoever's there. Because that is where there is real humor.
Yeah.
Remember Kevin O'Connor's stink face?
When they dropped
the year they ended up getting Darren Williams.
Oh, was it the Darren year? Yeah.
Yeah. Because they had the third best lottery odds, and they fell to fifth.
Yeah.
And the stink face on Kevin
O'Connor. Not even fun anymore.
Can't believe I'm here.
Yep.
Ugh. Because I'm sure he thought, like, oh, man, if we get the number one pick, I'm going to be here. All right. What's next?
Number three, Alyssa Peely makes her WNBA debut tonight.
Crazy the WNBA starts already. It's the preseason. They are taking on the Chicago Sky who features Angel Reese as well. So a rematch of their, what, Sweet 16 meeting, not last season, but two years ago.
I do think it stinks that that they have to turn around and play. That's not fair. Man, I don't know what the WNBA would do about that. You almost hope that they would give them a break. I mean, I'm sure Caitlin Clark's not going to come into the league playing 15 minutes a night, but that's probably what she should. That's a lot of basketball, lot. Dude. They played like a month ago.
And then there's the Olympics this summer. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot. Yeah, it's a major, major ask to have these women come in and play, turning around right away. And I understand it. You get some momentum coming off of March Madness and the fun that was had and how big women's basketball is right now. And I guess you hope you can follow that up. Also, Camila Cardoso.
So I am wishing good health on Alyssa Pele.
Yep, absolutely.
This season. Good health. Because she poured it all out there for the Utes last year.
There's some questions about how her game translates because she's not tall. She's 6'1", and she's playing forward, obviously, which is about the size of most of the guards. But, man, she is. She can score everywhere. She's tough. Good handle. I'm excited to see how she does.
Well, I'd get it. She should wear wristbands and just figure out a way to get a safety pin in
there. Get some tacks in there.
And then she's just got to go out and be physical. Charles Barkley was only 6'4", Ben.
Yeah. No, she's.
I say was like he's dead. Is only 6'4".
If she plays well, she has a chance to be a star because she is so unique. I think she has a chance to really draw some attention. She looks unique. She's got the big tattoo. She's fun to watch. She has a different style of game. So she could really make a name for herself by being as unique as she is.
She's currently better than Jalen Brunson.
Maybe.
She's already there.
We'll see. Well, that means she's better than Patrick Ewing.
She can pack a stat sheet. You know, she'll be on her way. stay tuned. One more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. We want to remind you our 50 segment is brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. We did a really funny thing. Ben and I were talking about this haunt we used to go to that you've been to. And they had a great jukebox. I don't know if you remember that. Uh-huh. I think they probably still do. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those jukeboxes where you couldn't, you know, the new ones where you can like jump in line and stuff like that. Like that wasn't the case with this one. It just went by like
order.
You requested it. It'll play when it's turn, right? So we discovered, my buddy and I, who were not wealthy at the time, discovered the best songs for your budget, but your best songs for your dollar, right? And the best song for your bang for your buck, so to speak, was Freebird.
Long.
Really long.
Yeah.
Another good one was Heard It Through the Grapevine, the Creedence version, which is surprisingly long. But you know what we did, Ben? We fired a $5 bill right into that jukebox, and we played Freebird.
Five times.
The whole $5. So that would be one song, a quarter. What is that?
Oh,
25?
Is it a quarter a song?
Yeah, yeah.
Yikes.
So like 25 times?
It's like $2 a song now. Yeah.
People were so mad that they left. They were so angry.
It's a lot of Freebird.
Freebird would end. And the whole place would be like, oh, please, something else.
Something
next,
else.
Please. And then you'd hear those first few chords coming in. And people, you just hear, oh, come on.
Hey, do you think Patrick Beverley's
amazing
career is over?
I hope so. I didn't like his act last night.
I mean, beyond the horrendous moronic thing of telling the ESPN producer, who is a woman, that he wasn't going to allow her to ask questions because she doesn't subscribe to his podcast, which, by the way, has been a shtick for a long time. But it's an idiotic look regardless, and it looked even worse last night with the way it came off after a loss, as poorly as he has been playing. But throwing the ball at the fan in the stands twice and, like, really hitting a woman in the face with the
crazy.
Ball? Like, the NBA should suspend him 20 games.
For a long time, yeah. You can't do that.
To throw it once and hit a woman, hit anybody, but to hit a woman who he wasn't aiming for, okay, that's a suspension. And then you get the ball back and you throw it again? Like, you're purposely trying to hurt somebody? You're trying to hurt a fan in the stands? By the way, where was he? Indiana? Do we not remember Indiana being involved in the Malice at the Palace? I know it wasn't in Indiana, but, like, it's been a part of this team, and I know Patrick Beverly plays for Milwaukee, but, like, it immediately brought that back for me, throwing stuff into the crowd, fighting fans, fighting Indiana fans. I'm not sure we see Patrick Beverly again in the NBA, and I hope we don't.
I'm totally with you on all of that. However, it does bring something kind of funny to mind. At some point when you have a shtick, it's not appropriate. Like,
I'm thinking of what was
Rusty's saying in Denver? Let's ride.
Yeah.
Is that it? Let's ride. And you remember, like, halfway through that dreadful first season when they took another L, Rusty's like borderline crying during his press conference. And at the end, he's like, let's ride.
Time and a place.
It's like, dude, you can forget the shtick. There's certain plays, like, you just get bounced from the playoffs and your career is possibly over. I don't like that shtick to begin with, but it doesn't mean that you have to do it.
No, you don't have to do it.
You don't have
get
to
over
do
yourself.
It, dude. You
recognize just, the situation.
That it's not now. You just lost a playoff. There's national TV around. It's not the just normal slappies in the local media.
And you didn't just have a normal game.
Like, yeah.
You threw the ball at a fan twice.
Twice.
You hit a woman in the face. Yeah, Pat Bev. I think the NBA's had enough of you.
Now is not the time to go with the shtick. Now is not, you know, Rusty, nobody wants to hear let's ride. You don't have to do it. Like what Cam Newton's kind of shtick was, he'd just wear these crazy outfits for his post-game stuff, right? He just lost the Super Bowl, dude. It's your fault because you didn't jump on a fumble. You don't need to. You could just a hoodie would be fine. you know what I mean?
Yep.
Time and place. You can set.
It's not about me anymore.
The shtick aside.
This moment is not about
me. For
a
minute.
The team lost. We lost. I know I'm the face of the franchise. Patrick Beverly's not, but he is. He likes to be a leader. He likes to be a vocal leader. He likes to pretend that's his thing. He's the guy in Minnesota who's jumping up on the scoreboard, on the scorer's table to celebrate. He likes to have the attention. Know when the right time and the place is. And he doesn't. And he's 35. He could probably still play next year, but...
Well, he's obviously more interested in marketing his podcast.
His podcast. So whatever, Patrick Beverly. Goodbye. The NBA doesn't need you. And if you're going to throw the ball at fans, maybe that just needs to be your last game and that's your legacy.
I get the players don't sign up to go somewhere to be abused. So don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody deserves to have epithets or stuff like that rain down on them. And I think it's weird that we even have to give a preamble for that when having conversations. But obviously all that behavior is unacceptable and nobody should have to put up with it. But why are the players so sensitive about what's going on with the fans? Don't worry about it. God, they're just there to watch a show. They're there to watch a play. They're there to get into it. They're there to cheer and boo and whatever. I had a buddy who used to take pride that when every single play, like his mom had floors, her company had floor seats or something at the Jazz back in the day. And he could list you right off the top of his head. Every player in the NBA, he got to respond to him when he was down there. That's just what fans do. I mean, I don't get the, just move on with your life.
And here's the thing, Patrick Beverly. I know he had said after the game there was a problem with these guys or whoever, and they were bugging them all game, and it didn't sound like Indiana security did enough. Okay. Maybe they said vile things. That's not excusable. Guess what? Take it to the NBA, and you know what the NBA will do? They will ban them. People get banned from arenas far more often than we think. Yeah, you're banned. They have the security, especially when you're that close. They can see you on camera. They can find out everything you said. Report it that way. There really is a protocol to handling all of this. And if Indiana didn't do it well, they'll be fined. their security will be in trouble. But then the player will, or the fan will still get in trouble. You don't need to take it into your own hands by throwing the ball at them, especially in that situation. It just looked bad. Patrick Beverley's an idiot.
Yeah, it looks terrible. No, there's a fine line that we saw in the Malice in the Palace, obviously, is the example. But you see it overseas in soccer all the time. There's like a fine line between 20,000 people going crazy and there being no control.
Yep.
And orderly sport. I'm actually surprised it's not crossed more in this country. And not, I'm not saying necessarily player fan fights, but I'm saying like brawls and bad situations and things that spin out of control. I know we all laugh at the football fights where one drunken bozo was falling all over himself to punch another drunken bozo, but like it's amazing that things don't spin out of control more often. And it, like, you've got to do everything you can to make sure that lines are clear and drawn clearly. And players going into the stands or players throwing basketballs into the stands or whatever, that crosses that line. You have to deal with it. Because what happens when the fan responds? We saw that in Detroit. Yep. What happens when the player takes it too far and the fan all of a sudden is got 1,000 people behind him that all of a sudden aren't going to obey the rules anymore? I mean, it's pretty amazing. That the security does as well as it does, because we don't see it very often in this country.
So I'll be curious. I would imagine we will see an announcement today or tomorrow on Patrick Beverley's future.
Michelle joins us next. Tim Lacombe at 11:30. Stay tuned. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. I want to remind you about Win Ticket Wednesday every week here on The Zone. This next week on Win Ticket Wednesday, you can win a pair of tickets to go see Neil Young at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on July 29th. Listen to the KSL Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win. This has got to be the first time he's toured in a while,
yeah,
or at least come here in a while. Neil Young's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I pay attention enough to that kind of concert scene. I don't think he's been here. I could be wrong, but that's a big deal. Go see Neil Young.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Absolutely.
All right. Joining us now, she covers the Utes for KSLSports.com, and she jumps on with us on Fridays. Not to mention, she does a little thing called the Saturday Show on Saturdays. The one and only Michelle Bodkin. What's up, Michelle?
Oh, you know, just enjoying... kind of a gloomy Friday, but we're still enjoying it.
Things are slowing down a little bit. I know baseball's picking up. I know softball's picking up for Utah Athletics. But there was still basketball news this week with Chris Burgess leaving. DeMarlo Slocum has left, even though I haven't seen that finalized. Maybe I just have missed it. But where is the Utah basketball program after what has transpired this week?
I think things look a little dire for them at the moment. You have 5 open roster spots. Obviously, along with the Burgess news, we had Kaba Keita enter the transfer portal. I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, only 2 transfers in and several out, including some of the guys that you really needed to keep. So, and then you add the coaching exits, and it does. It feels a little bleak. Craig Smith has his work cut out for him. He has a lot of things he needs to figure out now between filling 2 assistant coach spots and bringing in guys that can replace the talent that's left the building. Can he do it? I don't know. But time's certainly ticking. He's on the clock. Something's got to give. Things have to start happening for this program. And we'll just kind of see what, if anything, Craig Smith can pull together to make Utah basketball respectable when they move to the Big 12.
Do you have any idea why Utah was not able to retain Chris Burgess?
I think at the end of the day, money and probably job security is what it comes down to. I do think, you know, there's maybe some rumblings that the current coaching staff is kind of on the hot seat. I think this year's kind of do or die. You make the tournament or we'll probably start looking to find someone else to give this a go. And not that I think everything is entirely this coaching staff's fault. I think they were handed a pretty raw deal, kind of straddling the old way of doing things and now having to deal with NIL and figuring that out. And, of course, Utah Athletics has been having to figure out how to get NIL up and going for them, at least as it currently runs. So there's just been a lot of challenges all the way around. It's quite frankly not a good time to not be good at especially football or men's basketball. And I think BYU understands a little bit the football end of it. It's tough to play catch up on that if you're not already kind of rolling established and good. And Utah is seeing that, I think, on the basketball end of things. So I think that's ultimately what it comes down to. And like I said, it's kind of either sink or swim at this point in time.
So what I read from a lot of this, Michelle, is that they didn't give Chris Burgess enough money to stick around. They didn't give DeMarlo Slocum enough money to stick around. They're not paying these players to stick around because whereas some guys, and we've even seen at BYU, enter the transfer portal and it's just like, well, I'm actually just doing this as a negotiating tactic. And maybe Kaba Keita comes back to Utah, but Davon Smith doesn't seem like there's any chance he's coming back. Raleigh Wooster's already gone. Like, it just seems like there's no investment in this program either, which screams to me not that there's not interest, but there's a lack of belief that it's worth investing in with this coaching staff. Am I crazy for feeling that way?
I don't think you're entirely crazy for feeling that way. I will say I think people are forgetting that there's a lot of things that Utah's having to think about and deal with. And so as much as I know it kills fans to hear this, basketball may not be the priority at the moment. And one example I'll give out is the athletic department is now in the process of having to hire broadcast talent, in-house broadcast talent, because the Pac-12 network has gone away. They're also in the process of having to figure out how to build their own broadcast studio. So there's things like that that are also on the docket that they're having to think about, that they're having to allocate money for. And it sucks. I get that, you know, a lot of fans, a lot of the old school fans, their fandom stems from great basketball. And so to see that program kind of wither at the moment is a tough call. But there's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of moving parts. There's places where money has to be allocated to. And those things I mentioned, those are not cheap things. So it's a bummer. It's a bummer, but it may be a case that Utah basketball has to be put on the back burner because you're not taking anything from a football team that's really rolling, right? I mean, that would just be stupid, especially since that's the thing that kind of is driving everything that we're seeing in college athletics at the moment anyway. So, I think one way or another, whether it's that, whether it's they don't want to invest in this current staff, I think there is something to the idea that right now basketball just is not the priority for Utah Athletics.
Michelle, now that spring football is well in the rearview mirror, and you've had a while to kind of crunch on it, what are some of the main things you're taking from this year in spring?
You know, I think this team is really, really deep. I think that's the thing that's really kind of floored me, impressed me, and I knew that, but having Kyle Ireland ask me to put together a 2025 possible draft picks article and kind of really go through the roster and look at who has to leave and then who potentially could leave with a good year. There are a lot of names on that list. This is a deep, deep roster. And so I think, you know, that bodes well for them. Hopefully the injuries stay at bay. It feels like kind of going back and listening to some of the audio I collected over spring from the coaching staff, that they're very pleased at where they're at. And now it's just a matter of filling in, not necessarily for depth, but just to bring in better talent, like talent that could take them to that next level. That's really what they're looking for. And so, you know, that's another thing I know fans have been a little bit antsy about. Why aren't we seeing transfers in? This is driving me crazy. This should be an obvious thing. Well, I don't think they're in a rush to fill spots. They want to take the absolute best talent available and bring it into the program.
Michelle, this might be a little more inside baseball than things we usually talk about, but Utah is switching from Learfield to JMI Sports. Do you know what effect that's going to have?
You know, at this point in time, I don't really know what effect that's going to have, and I'm not entirely sure what prompted that move either at this point in time. It just could be it's time for a change, and sometimes you need to have a shakeup in order to move forward. And we've seen that a lot of times with Utah athletics. It feels like they're just very strategic in the way that they move. And sometimes it doesn't make sense to us or it's a surprise to us, but it ultimately ends up working out for them. So I'm curious to see what changes happen under JMI versus Learfield, who they've used, I think, since they've been in the Pac-12. But it's a very interesting time for Utah athletics. Like I said, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving pieces. There's a lot of changes happening that I don't think people necessarily realize are actually happening.
Any thoughts to the end of the Red Rock season in gymnastics? And I watched, I got my daughters and we watched the final, and what a heartbreaker in that last rotation, just leading going in. And that was too bad. They came up a little short.
Yeah, you know, I think that stings, right? You always hope and you always want your team to win. But at the end of the day, those girls went through a lot more than I think most people realize. It was a tough year. It was a really tough year. They had a lot of things thrown their way that honestly should not have been thrown their way. And for them to stick together and really galvanize and make a run at it the way that they did, I think is really impressive. I think it speaks to the character of those athletes. I think it speaks to the character of the remaining coaching staff after Tom Farden was ousted. And I think it speaks to what Carly Dockendorf is going to be able to bring to the program as the head coach. There's a lot of work ahead, you know, in order to kind of continue pushing this thing forward. But I think fans should feel hopeful and pleased with the result.
Michelle, you rock. We hear there's a very exciting edition of the Saturday show coming up tomorrow. All women on the Saturday show tomorrow?
All women on the Saturday show tomorrow. And then we have two guests coming on. So it'll be fun.
Wow. All right. We'll be tuned in, Michelle. Thank you very
much.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Michelle Botkin, our producer, Sarah, going to be involved in the Saturday show tomorrow, too. So she's one of those women.
Congratulations. That'll be exciting. Looking at Utah. Yeah, I mean, and they understand this. Mark Harlan understands. You got to be able to do multiple things at once. So maybe you have to build a broadcast studio. Maybe you have to hire a team. Maybe you have to all this stuff. Either you believe in your basketball coach or you don't. And I've not seen anything that says they believe in their basketball coach.
So Ben,
they can say it. The actions have never mirrored that.
So Witt the other day did another.
I shouldn't say never. Haven't recently mirrored that.
So Witt the other day did another sales ad for the collective. You know, I was thinking about this Burgess thing, and then, you know, thinking about what Michelle's talking about there. You were talking about, well, you got to pay the money. So Utah was at an advantage in the Pac-12 from this sense, Ben, that they were used to making a dollar out of a dime forever, getting the most out of every, you know, nickel that would come in the door. And they were really good at that. And then all of a sudden they're on the same financial footing as the other, you know, quote unquote P5 or whatever. And they were they kept their habits that made them good, and then they got more money. They invested in the right places. They didn't invest in other places that would have been foolish to kind of jump on and expand the stadium right away when the money's not even in the door. They started by building facilities and things like that. And anyway, they were really good at focusing on the right things financially. Like, they had the biggest recruiting budget in the league there for a couple of years because they weren't swimming in a mountain of debt like Cal or UCLA, and they were really good at that. Well, that never meant that they had more fans or financial booster support. They were really good at taking care of the money that was coming in the door. That was their advantage in the Pac-12, is it almost negated some of that other stuff, right? Well, now that all the booster stuff and all that is all legal, Utah might be at a real financial disadvantage because there's not any more Ute fans than there were. I mean, there are more than there were 10 years ago, you know, Ben, but not like exponentially more. I mean, it's never been like having huge booster support has never been their thing. There's just not that many huge boosters from the University of Utah. And now that you're relying on them to fund everything, they might be at a disadvantage on that standpoint.
The Garfs have certainly stepped up, put a lot of money into it.
There are some, but compared to
the
USC.
The Eccles have stepped up. No, of course. No, you're not going to compete with them. I mean, you're not going to compete with the.
But look at the Big 12 schools with all these things. Like, Oklahoma State is swimming in dough.
Yeah, I mean, there's oil money. There's all kinds of
Kansas
Texas money. Yeah, it's crazy.
Swimming in dough. Baylor swimming in dough. Utah's never been that.
No, they're going to have to be more selective with where they put this money, or they're going to have to get more donors to step up. And, you know, Utah is growing. The problem is I don't think a lot of these – where Utah is growing, I don't think the money funnels to the University of Utah. And by the way, that doesn't mean it funnels to BYU. Some of it will. We can already see it with Ryan Smith. He's a big donor. Does a lot there. I don't know if that tech boom that we're getting right now was going to end up with more money at Utah. Some of it will. I certainly don't expect them to have somebody step up and be their sweetheart the way the Garfs have. And the Eccles before that, though, that's really kind of been the two places where Utah's been able to go consistently. So you're right. They are going to have to learn how to compete in that environment. It's going to have to continue to change. Now, you got to have good culture, and you've basically got to be able to match the standard. I don't know if they're going to be able to pay above asking price compared to a lot of these schools.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know if that's possible. I mean,
you won't be able to do it across every sport. If you want to focus it on just football, I imagine Utah will figure out how to do it.
BYU isn't hiring this coaching staff because they're nickel and diming their everyday fans.
No.
I don't know how much of an ability to do that Utah has. And BYU's not as capable of it as other fan bases out there. I mean, there are so many Kansas fans.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And Baylor doesn't have any fans, but all their fans are worth $1 billion.
Now, a lot of their money goes to basketball. Again, I think even they have to be selective. You know?
So.
They if they had more money, they would have fired their coach already. I mean, Dave Aranda would have been out.
I think other schools will be in a similar position. But Utah was really good about spending that money that was coming in the door. Now that it's about booster support, that's never been their cup of tea. And I don't know if they can compete in the way that you're talking about, Ben. And I'm not saying that you're wrong, but I don't think Utah is going to be the type of school that can just be like, well, pay these guys. Just pay them. Whatever it takes. Just match whatever. I don't think they're going to be able to do that in either sport.
I think they'll be able to do it in football. I think that interest is there. I think they're at an all-time high still. You have more money coming in from organizations like the Garfs than ever before. You know, building an entire end of the stadium.
But Witt's begging people for...
Sure. I mean, every coach is. That's not unique to Witt. That's every coach in
Has Kalani
everywhere.
Done one of those?
An ad asking for money? I don't know what's allowed
collective?
In every program. I don't know what he's... I don't know how everyone does it. Everybody's asking for money. How they do it is probably different.
I'm saying, who are you asking? That's exactly what I'm saying. Who are you asking for money? I mean, BYU didn't have to do a giant fundraising campaign to pay these basketball coaches these salaries.
I'm not going to compare the way BYU does things to any other school.
And maybe that's fair, except for a lot of other schools out there have these big, huge donors that just write blank checks for whatever.
They do.
That's never been Utah. I don't think it's going to be.
No, it's going to be on the Eccles and the Garfs to continue to step up. I mean, that's who has done it recently. And, you know, you got the truck thing going on over the last year, and that's been a big part of it. We'll see if they keep doing that. We'll see who's willing to continue to step up. Yeah, you've got to continue to mine that. You've got to continue to find it. I don't think they're showing a willingness to do it with basketball. They have not seemed to have an issue doing it with football. They get people in the transfer portal. They must be paying them. They got Cam Rising to come back. They must be paying him.
Yeah, but you can pay one guy. I mean, you heard Michelle. They don't have the money. Michelle all but said it. I mean, he said it in a really nice way, like, oh, well, they've got to invest in TV studios and stuff. But she said they don't. She said that. They don't have it.
Yeah.
And what they do have is going to a quarterback. And the truck thing is cute, but that's not what I'm talking about. You're talking about writing big-time checks, which is what it takes to keep, let alone land, players now.
Yeah, they're certainly not doing it for basketball. I've not seen any evidence that they're not doing it for football. They're coming back next year as the best team in the Big 12. So they're doing something right.
Yeah.
And they've kept the top 15 quarterback around, who probably had a $2 million offer to go somewhere else, each of the last 2 years, I would imagine. I don't know exactly what that number is, but what does a starting quarterback cost? It's got to be seven figures.
Yeah, but what percentage
if Davon Smith is $600,000, $750,000 to be a good but not great starting point guard in college basketball, a top 10 quarterback in the country is going to be seven figures easily. Yeah, but Utah's found a way to keep him around, and they found a way to keep Brant Keithy around.
There are Ute fans, yes, but what I'm saying is what percentage of their budget goes to that $2 million?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't know.
I bet it's a lot bigger than most of the rest of the Big 12.
Might be. It's going to be hard, yeah. It's not easy. It's not going to be easy for schools that don't have that type of history to compete. And again, like I've said several times, the Garfs and the Eccles are going to have to continue to step up because, yeah, I don't think that tech money is going to Utah. That's where the money's coming into the state, and I don't think it's getting funneled to that program. So they're going to have to continue to find those people.
Stay tuned. We'll have Tim McCombs going to join the show. Coming up next, Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
What's that? Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Trying to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3, move it.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, I'm 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. I want to remind you to nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union.
Do you think this current format with NIL is here to stay? Or do you think they will find a way to rein it in and regulate it?
Man, is that ever a complicated question. I got to say, I think it's here to stay, at least for the short term. You know, I mean, by short term, I say 5 to 10 years at least.
Huh. Yeah, that's going to separate out some winners and some losers based purely on finances.
You know why? And this is cynical me. Because the only thing that would rein it in is federal legislation, and that would require bipartisan people to come up with a solution. And that's not how our government works at the moment, where politicians are punished for even thinking about siding with the other side or cooperating with the other side or anything of the sort, where all votes and legislation passed are now passed like just through majorities, you know, partisan majorities or whatever. Like, I don't see enough legislators getting on the same page in order to pass something that would do this. But the NCAA is toothless, so they can't regulate anything. They used to be able to regulate things, but they can't regulate anything anymore. We've seen what happens when it's left to the states, where some states do something about it.
Yeah.
Some states haven't. I don't think the state of Utah hasn't done anything about it, right? They haven't put in any sort of guideline. And so, no, I don't think anything's going to happen. I think this is it. I think action happened with no plan and no sort of thought to the consequence. I think, well, you're talking to me. I think people created a problem that didn't exist, and the solution is worse than the problem before. But, hey, nobody listens to me.
This is from
Yahoo
Sports.
But I don't think this is going anywhere anytime soon.
College leaders and plaintiff lawyers in negotiations now for months are inching closer to arriving at an agreement to settle the House antitrust lawsuit and usher into a sport a new model that features sharing revenue with athletes. Any settlement of the case comes in two parts. Compensation owed to college athletes for universities using their name, image, and likeness in broadcasts. And two, a future compensation model featuring revenue sharing with athletes. If you can get to a spot where you can have revenue sharing with athletes, I imagine you would get them to sign a contract. And if you can get them to sign a contract, you could probably put in those contracts that they are no longer allowed to negotiate outside of their name, image, and likeness belonging to the university. They would push for that, I would imagine. The question is, would the players agree to that? The problem with these players is they do not have a players union, and so they have all operated with their own interests over and over, and they're not collectively bargaining, which if they wanted to get this done right, they should have done it a long time ago.
Why would they want to get it done at all?
Yeah, maybe the players won't. Well, the players want this money that's owed to them now, and the NCAA will try and use that as leverage to settle to get something that they want.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, I'm not.
Joining us now, of course, longtime college coach. He's my co-host for Jazz Pre, Half, and Post. And, of course, Ben, he's our good friend, the coach, Tim Lacombe. What's going on, coach?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Doing well. Hey, before we get to the NBA, which I want to talk about, what were your thoughts on the Chris Burgess move? I haven't heard your opinion yet.
I think it was obviously a really good move for BYU, a tough one for Utah. I think it, you know, probably has as much to do with the opportunity at BYU as anything. I know Chris really well, and I can imagine it was difficult because he loves Utah, played there. But this time right now, I mean, there seems to be this major excitement around what's going on at BYU. I think the purse strings have opened up, you know, with the Big 12. And so they're kind of positioning themselves to, you know, kind of enter a new chapter of BYU basketball. And it just is something that I think Chris, when presented with and all that came with it, just couldn't turn it down.
What do you think about the reign of Kevin Young thus far, as young as it is?
He's done a really good job. I mean, to consider the first probably 10 days, he's in the middle of the playoffs. I understand he was coming back and forth. You know, he's working all night long, calling guys on his way to games. So, I mean, he handled that difficulty well, and then the byproduct of that was bringing back two really, you know, important guys in Hall and Saunders, really trying to keep a big part of the nucleus together. And then, I think they've done a great job just identifying guys that are out there that they can bring in. And obviously the coaching positions, they brought in Doug Stewart as chief of staff, who's a longtime coach, been a lot of different places, Brandon Dunson, and then obviously Burge is on staff right now. So there's still some things that need to be solidified, but I would say that things seem to be trending in the right direction.
Switching over to basketball, what surprised you from the opening round of the playoffs? A lot of high salary teams already eliminated before getting to even the quarterfinals.
Yeah, you know, I think it's signifying a little bit of a changing of the guard. We sat and watched the European influence spacing three-point shots, you know, volume three-point shots, really using that as a weapon. And then just the fact that five guys are better than, you know, three guys. And I think that's what this new age is looking like. The Denver Lakers series reminded me, it was almost like a clash of styles. With the old guard, you know, kind of a 90s, early 2000s approach, and now where the game is gone. But it does my heart well. I think this is what the game was meant to be and intended to be, and certainly stars are important. But I think you see the makeup of a team from, you know, the very first guy to the last guy, and how everybody kind of step in and help. Buddy Hield last night had a crazy game. Obviously, it kind of short-armed that last one, got it off a little quick, but a guy like that, you know, it's a weapon you can bring off the bench when guys aren't playing well, when Maxie's having a hard night. So I think that that's the volume, the depth of your roster, the versatility of it is really, really important in today's NBA.
Does our guy Rudy have a chance against the Nuggets?
I think he does. I mean, I think they were probably, if you want to ask my biggest surprise, is just the way they dominated, you know. I think they've got bad intentions right now, and Anthony Edwards is coming of age. You know, I know it's been been on the rise, but when a guy gets his first series win like that and gets that confidence and kind of that swagger, man, it's look out. And I think Minnesota is one of those teams like I'm talking about. I think they have done a great job, you know, in a very difficult situation last year, just flipping the script and making everybody valuable and important on that team. And you can go down the list. And Conley's been playing great. McDaniel's been playing great. Obviously, I talked about Edwards. Gobert, you know, it is interesting when there are guys that can kind of keep dudes in front of them. Rudy is a little bit more effective in the playoffs and is not being played off the floor. So I really am liking Minnesota. Denver is the king until proven otherwise, but that is going to be one whale of a series.
Looking at what's going on with the Cavaliers and the Magic, there's a chance for the Cavs to wrap that up tonight, though they have just not played well at all on the road. What do you see going on in Cleveland? What do you make of their future? I kind of think regardless, even if they get out of this series, I'm not sure it answers anything.
Yeah, I'm with you. It seems like a team that is kind of only partly serious a lot of the time. Just watching them guard on defense, you know, seeing some of the kind of the lapses and guys standing around. You know, I think Donovan has, you know, it's an interesting kind of what I was just talking about, but you don't see Donovan like moving off the ball a lot and cutting off the ball a lot. I mean, most of his stuff is running toward the ball and calling for a screen or an ISO. And I think that probably hurts him, you know, but certainly not. You know, somebody's going to gobble him up and bring him in, but it won't be in Cleveland. I can't imagine he stays there. It just doesn't seem like there's that great of a bond. And I will not – in fact, I'm going to say it. Orlando's going to win tonight. I mean, because Cleveland is a little bit of a – they've got front-runner syndrome. So when they're at home, they play a little better. And Orlando's hungry. So Orlando wins the game, the next one, and then, you know, I think it's flip a coin at that point. And maybe that young – kind of crazy energy of Orlando will supersede the inexperience, but that's been a really fun series to watch for different reasons as well.
Let me ask you this question, because Ben had an interesting point about the Magic earlier in the week. If you could put a player on the Magic to make them immediately better, give me a name or give me a type of player, or what are they lacking?
Man, that's a great question. You know, you got to love where Suggs has come to. I mean, I think there was a period of time where a lot of people thought he might be a bust, you know. But I think he's playing great basketball, certainly has been. This group is really kind of unified. I'm trying to think what they need. Probably, oh, man. Throw Mitchell Robinson on their roster, you know, some kind of a big, strong guy or a what's our guy from Cleveland we love, Jared Allen, somebody like that, to kind of go with all the other things that they have. Pablo's really kind of starting to come into his own. He had an amazing game, but Ben pointed out, and I did as well, his understanding of the game late really showed its head. You know, he took three just brutal shots in really bad possessions right there in the thick of the game. And that's stuff that hopefully, you know, will just come to him. But that Orlando team is going to be good for a long time. And, you know, a couple of additions, you know, be fun to watch them through the years.
I think the playoffs probably couldn't have broken any better from what the Jazz were hoping for. Philly's out. Phoenix is out. Milwaukee's out. I guess Dallas is probably going to win, and maybe that was one of the other teams they would have hoped, just so maybe that you would shake up the NBA landscape and there'd be some movement. But I got to say, I know Joel's not going to ask out. I think he's really happy to be there with Tyrese Maxey. I don't know if Milwaukee's there yet, and the injuries being the cause of doubt of why they lost that first-round series probably keeps that team together for another year. I don't know if we see a ton of player movement this offseason, and if there is, it's Donovan Mitchell, and I don't think the Jazz can get involved for obvious reasons.
Yeah. It's the intrigue of the offseason. I think that's the always kind of burning behind the scenes. And it's exciting because it is one of those windows of opportunity. You speak of Phoenix. They don't have a whole lot of windows of opportunity. They're pretty landlocked. And it surprises me all the time how really smart people that make crazy amount of money think they can just come into a game that is so complex and complicated and swing for the fences in your, you know, their first crack, and then not have the humility to say, we screwed up. You know, I was flabbergasted watching Ishbia the other day and kind of, you know, followed a little bit about him since. And, man, it makes me grateful for the ownership group we have. They let the basketball people be basketball people. And I think we have the best basketball people, you know, in the league. So whatever happens, Ben, whatever transpires, the Jazz will be ready to hop on it. I know they've got their eyes set on certain people that if they came available, it would be a no-brainer. So that's what we get to go into here now, that and the draft, obviously assessing all these young guys coming in. And then, you know, roll out summer league and off we go again.
Tim, you are the best. Thank you as always for jumping on with us, man. We really appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Coach.
Great to talk to you guys, man. It's great to hear your voice. Have a great day.
Thanks, buddy. That's our friend Tim Lacombe, the coach.
I don't see a lot of movement, which, again, I'm not trying to, you know, the Jazz want Lauri Markkanen back. The funny thing is, if not a lot of players move and a lot of teams want players to move, you've got a scarce resource and a higher asking price. I mean, that's just kind of how the market works. So if there are teams that want to get better and the Jazz have pieces that are tradable and the Jazz are saying, well, doesn't matter if we bring back most of the team or none of the team next year, you're probably in the same spot. You're still probably 3 or 4 or 5 years away from this team competing for a title. Maybe they flip the expectations on their head. You know, and that doesn't mean trading Lowry. There's a lot of players on this team they could move and try and get better.
Draft Bronny, man.
Draft Bronny. LeBron's going to opt out.
Draft Bronny number 8.
They will have be able to use cap space and a trade, and they'll re-sign LeBron.
You know the rumor that the Clutch folks are throwing out there? I say Clutch folks because, you know, when certain media members talk, you know where it's coming from. That they're going to do a 3-year $160 million deal.
For LeBron?
For LeBron.
Maybe. I mean, they'll give him whatever he asks for.
The third year won't be guaranteed, but...
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the second year and third year, yeah, have partial guarantees or LeBron options or however you can do it to make it as advantageous as possible for LeBron, of course. Yeah, I mean, he's still very good is the crazy thing.
Well, he still has resources to burn in LA. Yeah. You got to... LeBron's goal is to leave the franchise... Resources.
With nothing.
With nothing.
Yep.
Just dead on the vine.
Yeah. They've got 3 first-round picks.
To burn on Trae Young.
And Rui Hachimura or Austin Reeves. I mean, guys that are tradable. And 3 first-round picks. They can make salaries match, and they will be very aggressive. Philly's going to be very aggressive this summer. I'll be curious.
LeBron probably watched Buddy Hield have a good game last night. Be like, max out, Buddy.
Hey, I wrote the article yesterday on his podcast with J.J. Redick, which is why everyone thinks J.J. is going to be the next head coach of the Lakers. LeBron talked about how much he loves Lauri Markkanen. Loves Lowry. Talk about plays that the Jazz run that mirror what Klay Thompson does with the Warriors. And
yeah,
LeBron loved him, but you know why he loved him? Because Lowry used to wear his shoes, and he mentioned that also.
Yeah, well, and Lowry can shoot, and they need shooting on that team.
Oh, Lowry
still
would be a great fit.
They've needed shooting on that team since LeBron got there. They've never addressed that problem.
Nope.
LeBron's never even thought it was a problem. Give me Rusty Westbrook immediately.
Man, they're going to end up with something goofy like Tobias Harris or something.
They're in so much trouble. They should move off LeBron now. Let him go. If he opts out, be like, oh, thank goodness. And then trade Anthony Davis right behind him. And you're L.A. You're not Utah. You landing a star, your next star is not if, but when.
Yeah, but when, and then you have all the resources.
Right.
Yep.
So why would you give
by the way, is how they built a title around LeBron. They had all these young players. They got LeBron to sign there. And then
he used all
their resources to go and get Anthony Davis, and they won a title.
Kind of.
You can do that. They could do that again.
No, I don't think they can do that again because I don't think that they can create a pandemic that's going to give them 3 months off going into the playoffs again.
They can rebuild the team the way they rebuilt their team.
But to call that – if this Laker team had 3 months off going into the playoffs and everybody was rested, they would have had a better run at it because they're old.
Yeah, they're old.
And brittle. So, no, I don't think they can repeat that.
No, not winning the title that way, building the team that way. But they had a bunch of assets. They let everybody go. They got a bunch of second round or number 2 overall picks,
number five overall picks. I'm getting lost in the weeds.
You get a star to sign, and then you trade all the young players to build around that star. They could do that same thing again. that, which again is why they should move off of LeBron if they can. Trade Anthony Davis if they can. I know they won't, but
they just call whatever star's agent they want and say, ask out of wherever you are, and then you get that player.
Come here.
It's tried and true. It's and not hard.
Players will do it because you're right. It's the Lakers.
So why would you be so beholden to somebody? I don't get that. They've been run horribly.
A lack of creativity.
Since the old man died, I'm telling you. I don't know if the Lakers get back to being the Lakers. And the sad part is that one Mickey Mouse title gives them the crutch to be like, see, it worked. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't think it did. I don't know.
They can ride that for a long time, and they will. Teams do that. Boston's still riding Danny Ainge's title in 2008.
But that was a legitimate title.
Sure. It was 16 years ago now, right? When did that happen? It was forever ago.
But they didn't do it at Walt Disney World, correct?
Correct. They won in Boston.
Okay. Just checking. Stay tuned. We'll wrap up the show. Coming up next, Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Two amigos on the airways, talking sports. They got him made jokes and also loves his tie guy. Ben's got style with his scarves. Oh my.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, wrapping up a Friday show. This segment is brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology in doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. I wish I were Britney Spears in this way, Ben. It'd be just nice to take, like, have enough dough that you can take bi-monthly trips to the south of France on private jets.
Yeah.
And also mix in every month taking a trip to Hawaii and staying at a Four Seasons, because that's apparently her routine. I want that kind of
scratch. I don't know why I would trade lives with Britney Spears right now.
That's not the argument I'm making.
Yeah.
But being able to just...
The financial freedom, sure.
Private jet it to the south of France or whatever.
Absolutely.
And just be like, I'm gonna kick it here. Apparently each one of those trips costs her $1 million.
Well...
The Hawaii trips cost her $350,000. So we're talking like she's, if you divide it up, her monthly vacation budget is like $800,000 or something.
She, I'm sure, has a ton of money. Nobody has infinite money, you know? And if she's not actively putting out more work, she's not still doing her Vegas thing, right? So I would hope that doesn't run dry. I mean,
She's getting the
streets are littered
like
with
2 cents an airplay, right?
Maybe for every 1,000 airplays.
Yeah, that's a big thing, right? The musicians aren't making anything from streaming, and they're kind of bent about it.
So I would
or very little.
I would hope she's invested wisely and has enough money to do that. You know, I recognize the conservatorship she was under sounded tough and was not what people wanted, but we don't know everything going on behind the scenes with people's lives. And why, well, people are placed in conservatorships in the first place.
In front of the scenes, I know she's hopping on a private jet and going to the south of France every 2 months.
Sounds fun.
That sounds pretty freaking sweet.
Sounds like a party.
And then, you know, my little bee vacation is just bouncing over to Waikiki and staying at the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
That's when I don't want to blow it out, you know?
She'd probably just move there instead of living in L.A. or where she is.
I'm driving to Vegas over Memorial Day. Why aren't I flying to... The south of France.
Do it.
Apparently, I'm a sucker.
Wonder if she'll be there for the Olympics.
Probably.
Yeah.
All right. Hanson, Scotty G are coming up next. Ben, enjoy your weekend.
You too.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.